How are you guys doing? Good, good. Hey, if you're online, give us a thumbs up, give us a heart or something. You guys can, like, just give me this heart if you want, all right? That makes a big difference to me. I want to start with a quick survey this morning, all right? So here's my first question for you guys. How many of you subscribe to a newspaper? So you get a newspaper delivered to you weekly, monthly, whatever. Raise your hand. All right, I see a few hands out there. If you're online, you can give us a thumbs up or heart for that. Now, let me ask you this next question. How many of you have never subscribed for a newspaper in your life? You've never subscribed for a physical newspaper. All right, I see a few hands. You give me a thumbs up if you're online for that too. So here's where this question came from. A few weeks ago, my wife and I, during the pandemic, have taken up watching old episodes of NCIS on Netflix. And so there's like 13 seasons, so we will never get through it all. And we're watching this show, and there's these two characters who sit down at the breakfast table, and one of them is reading the newspaper. And as I was watching it, it totally reminded me of being at my grandma's house for holidays. Because I would go to my grandma's house over the holidays, and I would wake up in the morning to go get some breakfast, and she always ate weird things to me, like grapefruit for breakfast, right? So I'm there, I'm eating grapefruit, my grandma has her coffee, and she would always have her newspaper in front of her. I would sit down to eat my breakfast, and my grandma would do this. She would be reading in her newspaper, and without looking at me, she would just take a piece of the newspaper and hand it to me. And I'll never forget, I would sit there and I'd be like, what do I do with that? I don't use one of these things. You know, I'm a kid. And so I would read it and maybe read the funnies or something. But what made me, so I'm watching this episode. They do the same thing. They're sitting there, same exact thing. The guy sits down, the other one hands him a piece of the newspaper and he starts to read it. And it hits me. I paused the show and I leaned over to Jenny and I said, you know what? I just realized our kids have no clue what a newspaper is. Like, they have grown up in a world where they've never touched a newspaper. We've never had a newspaper in our house. I personally have never subscribed to a newspaper. I've never had one. And so we were joking about how we should go get a newspaper so our kids could see what a newspaper is. And someday they could tell their kids and be like, you know, back when I was a kid, people had these papers that they would read things off of and they would get their news that way. It struck me as I was thinking about this whole idea about the newspaper is that it is a terrible time in the world to be in the newspaper game, right? It's just a terrible time to be in the newspaper game. 20 years ago, almost every adult had a newspaper subscription. They would pick up a newspaper occasionally because it was how you got your news day to day. But the world's changed, right? Now, I can have all the news that I want at my fingertips within seconds. Like, and not just news that's pertinent to the region that I live in, but news that covers the entire world if I want to. Just like that, I can get it all. I can have access to all of it. And this is what struck me about this, is that something that was a staple for years in households is no longer even considered by the next generation, right? Like, for years, people considered newspapers staples. It was something that everybody had. And now there's a whole generation coming up that has wiped out the newspaper business because they just don't even care. They don't even think about it. It doesn't even blip on their radar anymore. Does that make sense to you? This is a big idea. So I want you to hold on to that for a moment. Take that idea of the newspaper and it going the way of the dinosaur. Put it up on a shelf for a second. Push pause on that. We're going to come back to it in a second. Because a few months ago, I was with our eldership. Our elders and our staff went on this retreat, and we went off to just pray over the church. And what we were praying for was that God would help lead us to several things. We wanted to come up with what our mission statement was going to be moving forward. We wanted to come up with what our target was as a church, like who we were going to target, what the demographic looked like for our church as we tried to create a target. And then we also wanted to come up with a vision statement. What was our vision for the next 3 to 5 years? And so what I wanted to do, if I could, is bring you guys into that retreat for a little bit and take you through some of the process. We'll speed it all up. We'll push fast forward on the thing and watch it all in fast motion, but give you some of the highlights of what happened on that retreat. Because as we prayed and we spent significant time, I mean, we were literally in this room that was every single inch of the walls was covered with whiteboard. And I'm telling you, by the end of the retreat, every inch of whiteboard was covered with writing as we brainstormed and prayed and just sought God and what he wanted to do with this church that I think God is doing something special in. And so I'd like to take you there. Before we went on the retreat, we asked one of our elders, Matt McKenzie, to do some research for us. We asked him to bring some statistics with him. And so Matt came and he had a bunch of statistics and he started reading through all the statistics. And there were a couple that I think from, in my estimation, really stuck out to us as eldership and a staff leadership of the church. There are a couple statistics. Now, as I read these statistics, they're going to be focused on a specific demographic. And what I want to ask of you is that you'll stick with me. Because for a lot of you, what we're going to talk about this morning may feel like it alienates you. But if you listen and stick with me, you'll find out that the goal is not to alienate anybody. All right? So can you do me that favor? Everybody say, yes, Kent. All right. Good. You sound like apathetic teenagers. That's what I was looking for. All right. So here's the first statement. All right. This was the first statistic that really just kind of blew us away. All right. Listen to this. When a mother comes to Christ, her family will join her at church only 17% of the time. All right, so think about that. Imagine that for a moment. We do all of this work to reach people who are lost, to go after the lost, to find them. We put all kinds of energy and resource and time and material into reaching people, and we reach a mother, and it's a good thing, right? Hallelujah, glory be to God. When you reach a mom for Jesus, it's such a good thing. But guess what? When you reach that mother, only 17% of the time will the rest of the family come with her. Some of you have experienced this. Some of you came to Christ, and you came, and you tried to get your husband, you tried to get your kids to come, and they just wouldn't come, and you go to church by yourself, and you sit there by yourself every week, and you feel, I don't know what it's like, but I've talked to women in that position. I know how it just creates this anxiety and this fear and this nervousness and this sadness, kind of a grief. About coming to church by yourself 17% of the time, only 17% of the time, if we reach the mother, will the rest of the family come? Well, look at the rest of the statistic. But when a father comes to Christ, his family joins him 93% of the time. I'm telling you, I think for us as elders, this just walloped us. I mean, I feel like it just hit us over the head because we were talking about how do we reach more people for Jesus? How do we do the very best job? You know the parable of the talents where there's these guys who've been given some money and the king comes back, the master comes back and says, what did you do with it? All I know is that in my ministry, I've never wanted to be the guy who says, well, I buried it and here's your money back. Because the master, you know what he says? He says, why didn't you just take a risk? Why didn't you try something? Why didn't you just try something? And so I've never wanted to lead in that way. And as we looked at this and thought about where could we put our time and our resource and our energy and our money and all of that stuff, it became very apparent that there was this huge hole in churches. And not only was there a huge hole, but the most effective means of reaching everybody was to reach the Father. If we could reach men, we could reach a greater proportion of the family most of the time. And so that was a statistic that just kind of blew our minds. The second statistic, if we can put that up there, is this. The 90%, there were a lot of statistics, but this one stood out to us. 90% of boys raised in church leave by the age of 20. 90%. Some of you in here can verify that fact because you raised your children in your church, in the church, you brought them to church, you did all kinds of stuff to try to help them connect to Jesus, and they have walked away from the Lord. As a matter of fact, statisticians who study the church and religion in America, they're calling this generation of young men right now, and young ladies too, not just young men, but this generation that's coming up, the millennials and under, they're calling them the generation of the nuns. Because when you ask them what their religious affiliation is in a survey, instead of saying Christian or Buddhist or Mormon or whatever, they say none. You know what? I realized, it hit me, that for most men, the church is as seemingly irrelevant as the newspaper is for me. Right? It doesn't even blip on the radar. For most young men, 90% of them, by the time they reach the age of 20, they're gone from the church. We've lost them. And it's not just that we've lost them, it's that they are nuns now. They look at it and they go, it's irrelevant, it doesn't hit me, it doesn't impact me, it's not important to my life, it's not how I build community or how I build friendships, it doesn't matter to anything in my life, and we have lost them. And I'm telling you, our eldership, our heart broke. As we sat there and we prayed and we thought about these young men and these young families that we've lost and how the most effective means to reach them was to reach everybody was to reach the family. So I wanted to just real quickly ask you this question because I think it's important to make sure that I'm hitting on this. How many of you, real quickly, how many of you know a young man in his 20s or 30s who sees church as irrelevant? It could be your grandson. It could be your kid. Yeah, raise your hand if you know somebody like this. It could be a nephew, a niece, could be coworkers. They just view it as totally irrelevant. There's a ton of hands. If you're on Facebook, give us some sad faces or whatever, some thumbs up. I don't know. Don't give us sad faces. That's very sad. It's terrible, right? This is an epidemic. I think if you were to talk to somebody in this demographic, somebody who's in their 20s and 30s, they would say, I don't just know somebody, but this describes most of the people I know. Describes most of the people I know. It is an epidemic. We live in a pandemic, but this is an epidemic of spiritual proportions. And so our eldership, we sat around and we talked about, what do we do about this? Because it became very evident to us that our target needed to be different from what most churches target. Most churches go, we want to reach young families, and we're going to have children's ministry and do all this stuff. And that's good. It's not bad. I'm not saying most churches are bad. But as we studied this, it became evident that God was tugging at our hearts for a specific demographic. And so what I'd like to do, if I can, is walk you through our target. And then after we've done that, we're going to go through the vision, all right? And we're going to take a quick segue into our mission on that journey, all right? So here's what we decided. As we prayed through and we worked through this, this is what we decided the target of Harmony Christian Church would look like, all right? So the first, we called him Herbert Harmony. Actually, that's what I called him. I think Robbie made up that name, and I think it's funny. So Herbert Harmony, all right? This is what Herbert Harmony looks like. This is what this guy who is our target looks like, all right? Number one, what do we got for him? His age. He is probably a 25 to 35-year-old man. All right. Now, we got that demographic. We actually thought about going younger initially, but what we found as we studied Georgetown was that it looks as though people leave Georgetown when they go to about college age, and then they'll come back in about 25. So what we found was Georgetown seems to be the kind of place where you come to establish a career. And so we thought, this guy, he looks like he's probably 25 to 35. The next question we asked was, does he have kids? And we think that he likely is living in a blended family. He may be a single parent, but there is a strong likelihood that he has kids somewhere in his life. Whether they're his kids or not, we don't know that, but he probably has kids in his life. Next question was relationship status. We think this, that he is probably living with somebody and possibly married. But the marriage thing is maybe not as important as it was in previous generations, and so this is probably what he looks like. This one was interesting. We talked about what kind of activities does Herbert Harmony get engaged in. We talked, does he like sports? We couldn't really nail one thing except for this one issue. We think that at some point, video games have been an incredibly important part of his life. Like, they took up the majority of his thought life at some point. They were what he did in the evenings and the afternoons. They're how he engaged with his friends was not how a lot of you, do you remember those things that had cords and the cord went to a wall and you had to stand there with it to your ear and talk to people? You remember those things? Phones, remember those? And he probably has not used one of those, like the corded phone. And if he did, it was when he was a little child. His life has been spent digital. And when he played video games, he didn't play them with friends in the same room. He probably played them with friends across maybe even the whole continent, right? Maybe even on a different continent. Video games were a huge part of his life. His income averages about $42,120. This is the average income for that age group in Georgetown. And then these were some things that we feel kind of describe him, all right? So let me read through these and explain them. They perceive the guys in this age range perceive their role as a man differently than previous generations. They are more likely to be directly involved in household chores, raising children, changing diapers, feeding the baby, all that kind of stuff. My dad, I think he changed like 3 diapers in his lifetime. I changed easily half of the diapers in our family, if not more. These guys are way more involved in the household. Actually, at my last church, I was leading this Bible study group, a leadership group for men, and I realized that for 30 minutes, we'd been talking about how they all do the laundry in their house, and they'd been talking about, like, which laundry detergents they use, and all that. And I finally was like, dudes, we've got to stop. Like, has anybody shot a gun lately or done anything manly, right? Because all we were talking about was all of this kind of stuff. The role of what it looks like to be a man has changed drastically. And it is probably, if you're over 50, it is probably drastically different than what you thought of being a man was like. So another thing, they were raised in a culture that paints men as either violent, dumb, or weak. I want you to think about your favorite TV show, drama, comedy, whatever. Most of the time, the men are going to be painted as either violent, they're going to be painted as dumb, or weak. That's just the truth of how our culture paints men nowadays. It is a sad reality of trying to elevate women. We felt like we've had to de-escalate who men are. It's really not the truth. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be either or. You can have both be elevated, right? We can care about both. But what it has meant for these men is they're unsure exactly what it means to be a man. They don't know how to be a man. So do you know what they do? They think it means that they're posers, that they drink a lot of beer and they talk about women and looking at pictures that they shouldn't look at, and they think it means maybe pushing people around a little bit or being some kind of jokester kind of guy, and that's what they think being a man is, and they have no sense of what being a true man who's like honorable and trustworthy and all the things that really matter, they don't know how to get there or what it means. And so the last thing that we know about them is that they struggle with deep anxiety. These guys in this age group, I had never even really heard the word anxiety very much until I started working with guys in this age group. And I would counsel guys who were like incredible anxiety, couldn't get out of bed anxiety. It actually changed how I preach, and I now do some sermon series around mental health stuff because of this. Crazy. It's just a totally different world, a different generation. And what I want you to hear, all of this again comes down to the fact that 90% of the time, if we reach that man, we reach his family, right? So I was thinking about this because my concern for you is that you may go, Kent, I don't match that target. Like, I don't even show up in that demographic. Now, I need you to hear this. I don't really show up very much in that either. I am a man, yes, but most of the other stuff, like, I'm out of the age range. My marriage life, my family life is different than that. There's a lot of stuff. The things that I engage with and the activities that I love are different than that. I don't show up in a lot of that demographic. But here's what I was thinking about, because you may be thinking that yourself. Like, Kent, I don't show up. Does that mean that Harmony just doesn't even care about me anymore? I was thinking about this. I used to work in this church that had quite a few older people in it, and it's not a bad thing. It's actually a really good thing, because before that, I worked in a church that only had young people. And what I found is that young people have a lot of spunk, but they have no know-how, right? they're like, woohoo, let's do something. And then they're like, I don't know how to get it done. And they don't have the money to do it either, right? So what I found was having this balance where you have the family of God, you have older people and young people all together was really powerful. It was really powerful because you had all the spunk and you had all the know-how mixed together. But what was interesting was in that church that had quite a few older people is every week in the summer, I would have some dear old lady come up to me, and she'd say, now, Kent, I'm just freezing in here. And I'd say, I'm really sorry about that. You're just cold? We've got some blankets. Do you need a jacket? She'd say, I bring a jacket. We got to turn that air conditioner down. And it was funny because on the exact same Sunday, literally this happened one time, the exact same Sunday that lady came and told me the air conditioner was too cold, I had this young person come to me, and he said, Kent, it is so hot in here. I'm sweating. Can we do something about it? Crank up the air conditioner? What am I supposed to do as a leader with that, right? What do I do? Because one group is freezing, one group is sweating. It happens all the time. Kent, the music's too loud. Kent, we don't ever sing like any songs that I even recognize. Kent, I wish we just would sing some of the old hymns. Kent, all we do is we sing too many old songs. What is a leader supposed to do with that? How do I even begin to decide what to do and who to reach and how we're going to operate as a church? Have you ever thought about that from the church's perspective? Can I read you a passage? This is how the Apostle Paul dealt with these kinds of issues. 1 Corinthians 9, 19 through 23. He said, though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. Verse 22, he says this, to the weak, I became weak, to win the weak. I have become all things to all people so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessing. Paul became who he needed to be to win to Christ the person that he was trying to win. Paul became who he needed to be. Whoever was in front of him, he became who he needed to be to reach the person who he was trying to win, right? And so at a practical, personal level, that means whoever's in front of me, I need to become who I need to be to reach them. But as a church, we have to make decisions about how we're going to do things and what we're going to do. And as I've been in ministry, I've watched this principle be true, that the more that I think church is about me being comfortable, the more that I think the church is about me being comfortable, the worse the church goes. The more that I think the church needs to bow to my whims and my needs, when I found that as in the church becomes about making me comfortable, it means that I've missed the point. When it's all about singing the music that I want to sing. Do you know if we were going to sing the music I wanted to sing, do you know what we would sing in here? 1990s Christian contemporary music. Because that's when I came to Jesus in the 1900s. And we sang, Lord, I lift your name on high, right? If we were going to sing what Kent wants to sing, that's what we would sing. What would we sing if we were singing what you wanted to sing? Probably not. Some of you would be the songs we sing, but some of you would be totally different music, right? When church becomes about me being comfortable, I'm doing it wrong. I'm doing it wrong because it's not about me being comfortable. Paul didn't become weak because he wanted to be weak. Paul didn't become as one under the law because he wanted to live under the law. Paul did those things because he wanted to reach people who were doing those things and who lived in those ways. It's like when I was a youth pastor, I used to say this all the time. I used to say, my job is to be cool, like get kids to think that I'm cool and to like me and think that I'm a cool guy so that I can tell them that being cool doesn't really matter. That was like my whole job. Like, hey, I'm going to be cool and hope that you like me and come to, and then I'm telling you the whole time, being cool doesn't matter at all. It doesn't matter. You know, what happens is if we don't have a target as a church, we don't know how to make decisions. You know how we'll make decisions as a church if we don't have a target? We'll make the decisions based on whoever has the loudest voice. Kent, it's too hot in here. Kent, it's too cold in here. Must be too cold. That's the loudest. They went out. Do you know how our church has decided we're going to make decisions? Based on a targeted demographic that gives us the most chance and opportunity of reaching the most people 90% of the time. The whole family will come to Christ. Just for a moment, take out of the equation that we're talking about men, and just for a moment, think about some of those friends and family members that you have, and if we could have 90% of them start showing up and finding Jesus, wouldn't we be cheering and celebrating and doing whatever it took to reach them? What if I could give you 90% return on your investments and your retirement portfolio? Wouldn't you invest everything you had in that? It just makes sense. And so what I want you to hear is when you something goes against your comfort level, when it's something that you don't like that we're doing, here's what I want you to start practicing saying. I want you to start saying, I don't really like that, but I love being a part of a church that would try it. Right? That's an easy thing to do. I don't really like that. It's not what makes me comfortable. It's not what I like. It's not in my wheelhouse. But I love being a part of a church that'll try that. To reach 25 to 35-year-old men who are living with a lady and don't have any clue that Jesus can impact their life in radical ways. That's what I want us to be. That's what we're going towards. That's why the target matters so very much. So with the time that I have left, and I don't have very much, I want to boogie through a few things. I want to take you to our mission real quickly, and then I'm going to take you into our vision, all right? So our mission, what this means is we started talking about reaching young men and how do we do that and what does it mean? It means that lots of stuff may have to change. It means that, and I need to real quickly say this, it does not mean, having a target of young men does not mean that if you come in and you're not a young man or you're a woman or you're single or any of those things that you don't matter. What it means is this is how we're making decisions. But when you walk through the door, when your granddaughter walks through the door, we're going to love them like crazy and hope and pray and do everything we can to lead them to Jesus. But what it means is the decisions that we're going to make, maybe about decor or the songs that we sing. Mike has even talked about we need to make sure that we sing songs in keys that men can sing in, right? Because we don't, oftentimes singing is geared, in churches has been geared towards women. One of the things that it has meant is that as we pursued what our mission statement for this church was going to be, that we went with a more masculine toned mission statement. I've never heard a mission statement like this in all the years that I've been in ministry. Most of them are like, we're going to just love God and love people. And this one has some strong language in it. Did you hear it? The elders spent like the majority of our time on our retreat. We would come back to this over and over again. Is that what we want? How do we just kept whittling this down until we got to where we felt like this is what God was calling us to. We are advancing the kingdom. We're advancing the kingdom by living for God and loving people. Advancing language, you know what kind of language that is? That is war language. That is battle language. That is, I'm going to say it, I think that's masculine type of language. It gets you pumped to go do something, and that is the point of this. We are advancing the kingdom. This actually comes from, I'm not going to read the passage today, but in Matthew, Jesus, he asks his disciples, who do people say I am? And they say, you're Elijah, there's all these things, maybe John the Baptist. And he says, well, who do you say I am? You guys know this passage probably. Peter says to Jesus, you're the Messiah. You're the Son of the living God. You may have heard it as you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. We ask people when they get baptized, do you believe that about Jesus? And Jesus says, on this rock, I will build my church. Right? There it is. And then he says this, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. The gates of hell will not overcome the church when it's built on that rock, when it's built on the confession that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. What's interesting about this, you may not know this, but Jesus is at Caesarea Philippi. And at Caesarea Philippi, they worshiped the god Pan, the Greek god Pan. And it was despicable, the way he worshiped. I'm not going to say it because there may be little kids in here and it's that despicable. Like, you don't need to know. But at Caesarea Philippi, there was this cave, and at the entrance of the cave, a spring came out of it, and people believed that it was the gateway to Hades, death, hell. And Jesus takes his buddies to this Gentile territory. It's the only time he goes to this place, and he does it to do this object lesson at the gateway to hell. And he says, on this rock, I'll build my church. And not even the gates... And the gates of Hades, not even the gates of Hades, of hell, will overcome it. He's taken his boys to the gateway of hell so he can say, we're storming this. We're advancing God's kingdom. He goes on to tell them that he'll give them the keys to the kingdom of heaven. They'll be able to unlock things and lock things. This powerful object lesson that Jesus does for these boys on this hill. It's powerful. And I'm here to tell you, we want to be the kind of church that advances against the gates of hell. People don't talk about hell in church anymore. It's kind of gone out of fad. I don't know why. The Bible talks about it a lot. People who don't believe that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, do you know what where their eternal destination is? They're eternally, yeah, it's to hell. It's, you don't just magically get a slip by. Now, you can be somebody who didn't have a perfect life, who was kind of unrighteous in this life, but you had a faith in Jesus. You were walking towards him. You can have that. You can believe Jesus. Jesus says the work of God. And John, he talks about what's the work of God, and he says it's to believe in me. And so somebody who has turned their faith, their life over to him, that's powerful. That's life-changing. That's the kind of thing we want to put into people's hearts and their minds so that we can advance against the kingdom of darkness and bring the kingdom of light into this world. And that's powerful, rescuing your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren and your kids that are in your home right now, providing an opportunity and a place for them to get solely connected to Jesus. That's what we want to see happen. And so here's the vision. Here's what all this means. Our vision is this, that in the next 5 years, we want to be a part of these three things. All right, are you ready for them? We'll kind of boogie through them. First one is this. We want to plant churches that plant churches. This is big. This is not a tomorrow kind of thing. We want to be a part of planting churches that will have the DNA inside of them to plant another church, that will have the DNA inside of it to plant another church. Because advancing the kingdom is so much bigger than filling this room with bodies, right? We would all love to see this church grow. I pray for that all the time, that we'll see your friends and family come to know Jesus and give their life to him. That's vital. But the kingdom is so much bigger than this building, isn't it? So much bigger than even Georgetown. So we are praying about God allowing us to help plant churches that plant churches that plant churches. And so what does that mean specifically? It means this. Specifically, we want to be a part of planting three churches over the next 5 years. So in the next 5 years, we want to help plant three churches. Two of those churches will be significant partners through our missions giving. So that means, some of you know that in the past, our missions giving had kind of dropped off as had some financial challenges. And we made a stand. We took a stand a few months ago and said, no, we're going to give 10% to missions no matter what. Because we ask you to tithe, we're going to tithe as a church to missions, to seeing God's kingdom advance in other parts of the world. And so we are doing that, and we're going to take a significant portion of that 10%, and we're going to set that aside to give to church plants. And so we want to partner with two church plants and help get two new churches started. Now, some of you may be going, Kent, why do we need more churches? There's tons of churches. What you might not know is that every single year, 4,500 up to 5,000 churches are closing every single year. Every single year. My gut is that this year and next, it will be significantly higher than that. Because the research right now, as of right now, with COVID, shows that about two-thirds of people who were attending church are still going to church somehow. They say that the statistics are that about a third are going to live, like in-person church, a third are watching online, and then a third of the people who were going to a church before COVID aren't going anywhere anymore. They've just dropped off the face of the earth. We lost them. And I think that right now in our world, the church is going to suffer in the next few years like it hasn't suffered before. And here's the deal to me. Here's the deal to me. We live in this moment of history where we can just choose to lick our wounds and be sad, or we can figure out ways to pick ourselves up and advance the kingdom, right? We can look at it and go, boy, that's tough. Boy, that stinks. Or we can pick ourselves up and go, you know what? Right now there's more opportunity than there has ever been in the world to reach more people, because there is this harvest, this bountiful. So all we got to do is ask the Lord of the harvest to send workers, right? And so as a church, we are committing to planting three churches. I don't know how we're going to do it. But what I do know is that the first two, we're being strategic about it. The first two are intentional, that we want to partner with organizations and groups that already are doing this around the country. Because we want to learn from them, and we want to get connected into their resources, and we want to have opportunity to build relationships with these groups. Because the third one, we would like in 5 years to be working towards sending out our own church plant from Harmony. That might mean that God is birthing inside of you right now, one of you, the desire to become our next church planter. To say, what if that's me? What if I started studying and preparing and working towards and building up and becoming the next church planter? What if some of you became part of the next church plant and you said, I don't want to be the planter for sure, but I would love to go and support something like that? Do you know why it's important to start new churches? See Peter Wagner, he said this. I'm not related to him. Wish I was, but I'm not. He says this, that it's the single most effective evangelistic method under heaven is planting new churches. It is the single most effective evangelistic method. I can attest to that. My wife and I planted a new church. This was where I had all these young people and no old people, because only young people ended up coming to our young church. And we saw about 80% of the people who came get baptized. We were such an unchurched church. Our goal was to have a church that unchurched people wanted to go to. And so we were such an unchurched church that the first week we did offering, none of these people knew how to do offering. And so I forgot to tell them, you remember churches that used to pass offering? I forgot to tell them that you needed to start at the front so people could see the offering was happening and work towards your back. So they started at the back because they didn't know what to do. And our offering was like 10 cents and because nobody knew it was coming. And then the next week I was like, hey, start at the front. And they started at the front and our offering grew by like 300% or something. You know, it's like, it was crazy. But it was because these people had no clue. They didn't know church. I had a guy, we were sitting in a Bible study, and I said, everybody turn to, let's say, Matthew 16:8. And everybody started flipping, and he finally went, Kent, what are the big numbers and the little numbers in the Bible? And I was like, oh man, I'm starting up here and we're down here. Church planting is the way to reach the next generation. It's part of what advancing the kingdom means. And so specifically, we want to start 3 churches. The second thing that we want to do, we want to create an active sports ministry to men and families that leads to significant engagement of the lost. We want to create an active sports ministry to men and families that leads to significant engagement of the lost. One of the things that we realized is that this area specifically has a huge pounding heart for sports. And I want to tell you, we don't want to start your old church softball league. Remember when churches would have softball leagues and you'd play other churches and it was really a chance for Christians to hit balls at each other? That's not what our goal is to create the old church softball league. We want to create this active, engaging sports ministry that draws you in and everybody in town wants to be a part of it and where it's the kind of thing that lost guys, you could easily invite a guy from work or your grandson or whoever it is to come and play some ball, to go and hit some balls, to go to the driving range together, however the sports ministry plays out, that you could easily invite them and it would be something that would be engaging to them that they'd want to be a part of, that would draw them in. But our goal isn't to have people playing sports. Our goal is to use sports as a means to lead people to Jesus. And so we want to have Bible studies that like a birth out of this. And we want to have people that are praying together and that when we find out one of the guys in there, his marriage is on the rocks, that people are praying over that. And when another one finds out that his dad just died, that they're showing up with food and caring for him and like showing up in ways that that guy's never experienced in his life, where we bring the church to these people. But can I tell you a secret? I don't care about sports at all. So you know who's going to have to do this? You. You. See, this isn't a vision of Kent. These aren't visions of Kent and the elders going out and we're pulling up our pants and rolling up our sleeves and doing it all. This is about us as a church dreaming together. And what could it be? And my bet is that there's somebody in here that you, like when I started talking about sports ministry, things just started popping into your mind. And you were like, what if we did this? And what if we did that? Yeah, what if? What if we just started throwing some stuff at the wall to see if it worked? What if you used some of the skills that you use in the business world to organize all kinds of big activities and things and projects, and you took that and you started organizing ministry at the church to change people's lives? What if? What if? That's the second one. This is us as a church living for God. The first one, the planting churches, is us advancing the kingdom. This third one is us loving people. And this is what it is. We want to capture stories of impact. What this means is we want to lead in a way that encourages us all to live our lives in a way that makes a difference. We want to start capturing stories of impact. In our staff meetings every single week, David asks us, he says, what are the wins? And we start talking about where we saw God working this week and what we saw God doing. And so we start sharing our wins. And what we realized is that a lot of times our leadership knows the good stuff that God is doing around our church, but the greater church at large doesn't know about that. So we've done some things like you may have gotten engaged in this online. On Facebook, we have the Facebook online community now. It's a closed group, so you have to ask to be a part of it. We let you in, and you can be a part of that group. It's only closed in the sense that you have to ask to get in. It's not anybody can be a part of that online community, right? And then we have another one that's another group that's called our Facebook prayer wall, where you can post prayer requests. Our goal is that every single day of the year, we will have stories coming up on those Facebook prayer wall and the Facebook online community of people saying, man, I just have to share with somebody where I saw God working today. I've been at work. I've been praying for weeks for this coworker. And this week something happened and he just asked me this question. And we had this conversation about God. And oh my goodness, it just blew my mind. And all of us will be on Facebook going, oh, it's awesome. We're praying for you. We're behind you. We're ready for the, can't wait to see what God does. And then somebody else will pop up on the prayer wall and they'll say, I sent this letter to my grandkids and I just wrote them how much I love them and how much I care about them. And I'm praying for them. And I hope that they'll find a church because our church is on fire to reach people like them. And I hope they'll find a church that's like that too. And my grandson reached out to me and he started asking me questions. Man, will you guys be praying? It'll be on the prayer wall. And we're so excited. Okay, we're praying for each. And there will be this groundswell of us hearing the stories of God and celebrating the stories of God. And we're working as a staff to try to figure out more ways that we could democratize that. But guess what? When we start looking at the world through the lens of what is God up to, if you would just start asking that question, what is God up to? You'll start to see it. And you'll start to write down the answers. And as you share that with other people and we encourage each other, our hope is that a year from now, every single day, there will just be this flood of all the good things that God is doing. All the good things. And our goal is to figure out ways to encourage you in living that out, in loving people. That's our vision, is that every day of this year, that we would have stories of impact just falling out of the heavens. I wanted to close with this. I was thinking about this time I went to preach at this church. It was a church that was primarily older. I think there were maybe five people under the age of 60. Everybody had gray hair, and it was a beautiful church. It was actually a pretty active live church. Like they had grown fairly good size for where they were at. The church ran about 200 people. And so it was in this auditorium, you know, maybe not even as wide as our poles, and it was kind of packed in with people. And I'm preaching, and this pastor had asked me to come to preach, and he said, Kent, would you just come and preach a sermon to try to help us get outside of the walls of the church to reach the next generation? And so I came, and I it was in Kansas, and so it was about farming, my sermon was. And I preached about, like, farming the next field, you know, and how do we get there and all that kind of thing. And as I was preaching, as I'm in the middle of it, I felt the Spirit lead me. So I feel like most of the time I'm most connected when I'm preaching. And I'm preaching, I feel the Spirit lead me, and I feel Him say, Kent, you need to invite these people to come to the altar. It's funny, because I describe it as I'm walking around inside my sermon, because oftentimes when I'm preaching, my brain is over here thinking about other stuff as I'm doing it. Like I'm prepared, like something else pops up, and I'm like, God, I don't know if I should say that. I'm gonna say it. I said it. And so I'm up there, and I'm preaching, and I'm walking around inside of the sermon. I'm thinking, like, I feel God calling me to call all these people forward. And so I got up at the end of my sermon. I said, I'm going to do something I didn't plan on doing, and I haven't ever done before. I want to invite all of you to come forward today. Because I said, I'm guessing that for most of you, what I described today was your granddaughter. It was your grandson. It was your son. It was your kid that you're right now raising in your house that you go, man, I don't want when they get to be 20 for them to walk away from the church. I started preaching, and I made this call, and I was so nervous that nobody would come forward. You know, it's kind of, felt like it might be embarrassing if nobody came forward. I said, I'm just calling you all to the altar. I know it's been years since you, like maybe since you were a little kid, maybe 80 or 90 years since you came and you've knelt at the altar. I said, I just am calling you to the altar to come forward and just beg God to reach the next generation. Beg God to do whatever it takes with us to reach them. Beg God to do it again like He did in the book of Acts, like He's done so many times throughout the history of the world, to bring a revolution of the heart that changes the world. And so I left it hanging out there. The worship leader came. I think we sang like Just As I Am or something, a great old hymn. They started singing it. All the lights were on. It wasn't like this. And I could see everybody in there. And I watched as this little frail old lady, I would say she was probably 80 or 90 years old. She made her way out. And she could hardly walk. You know, wasn't real stable. She walked up to the front. And her eyes, just tears streaming down her face. And I'll never forget, because as she came forward, it was like she was the catalyst for this movement, because literally every person in that church came forward. There was standing room only. They were all standing there. Tons of elderly people just weeping and crying and praying over their children and begging God to reach their children and their grandchildren who had been far from God. And it struck me as I was preparing for this sermon. I'll be honest with you, I didn't want to preach the sermon, because it's scary in the middle of a pandemic to say things like, we want to plant 3 churches. We want to start a sports ministry. You can't even play sports together. It's scary. I don't know what the future holds. But you may have heard it before. I do know who holds the future. Yeah? Here's what I know. This is scary for me. It's scary to step out in faith like this, but I know him. And I know that he's just waiting to bless this church and waiting to unleash things. But I don't know that he's going to do that if we're not just begging for his intervention. So today, I want to invite you to do what I invited all those folks, those brave souls. Like, I loved it, because so many people think elderly people are done, or maybe a little like reserved or whatever. I loved that this whole room of these folks just came. It's like you could see their faith like a child lived out. I want to invite you like I invited them. I know with COVID, it's probably not wise for us all to come up here, so I'm going to invite you to do something very different. I want to invite you during this next worship song to get on your knees and just beg God to unleash his presence in this world again. To unleash his hope in this world again, to unleash his joy in this world again, to unleash salvation on men who have wandered far from him, to unleash, and to beg God to do it again. And then tomorrow for you to get on your knees and beg him. And then tomorrow get on your knees and beg him. And then tomorrow get on your knees and beg him. For us, there's an old parable that Jesus told about this woman that just knocked on the door. Bugged the judge till he gave her what she wanted. That you would bug God with this. You just pray and pray. And maybe for you, God laid on your heart today, like he pricked you about the sports ministry or church planting or ways that you can start, who you should start praying about, sharing the gospel with or talking about, or stories of impact. That you would start praying for that. I hope that we will see a flood of God's movement in this world. So during this next song, I invite you to join me. I'm going to be on my knees up here. You're welcome to come forward if you're comfortable with that. But if not, stay in your place. Get on your knees. If getting on your knees isn't physically possible, I have terrible knees. It hurts me like the Dickens. So if getting on your knees isn't physically possible, sit down. Maybe for you, it's standing up and worshiping. But for you to take this time to beg God to do it again, you guys join with us in this time of prayer and worship.